Hi, everyone. Welcome to Just Mental Health with Steph and Em, the podcast where we discuss mental health from a social justice lens. I'm Emily.
And I'm Stephanie. A quick disclaimer before we get started. We are mental health professionals, but this is not to be taken as professional advice.
We are also aware that our privilege may cloud our perspective on some topics, and we not only welcome, but encourage you to message us with criticism and correction. Let's get started. So our small business shout out for this week is Big Picture Psychological Services. And the owner of this practice is Dr. Paige Hover, who is actually with us today. Welcome. And so her practice is, Dr. Hover is a clinical psychologist. She works with anxious perfectionists to manage anxiety. I'm so sorry, my cat was doing something she wasn't supposed to be. To manage anxiety, burnout, and budding addiction concerns. She provides psychological, neurological testing, and some therapy. She's licensed and practices in Illinois, New York, and all SciPact states. Outside of her practice, she likes to do presentations about all things testing and consults with other clinicians and grad students about ways to improve their practices and manage or prevent their own burnout. So she does all of her services virtually at this time, but she is located in Chicago. You can look at her website, bigpicturepsych.com, or her Instagram is bigpicturepsych, is her Instagram handle. She does lots of different services, like I mentioned, testing for ADHD, psychological and neurological testing for ADHD and beyond, therapy for young adults, college graduate students. She's really wanted to focus a lot also on consultation, supervision, and workshops. So definitely reach out to her if you are interested, and we are really excited about a really great conversation we're going to have with her today.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on our podcast.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So one of the things that when we were talking about, you know, what this podcast was going to be about and what you wanted to talk about, you brought up burnout. And I think anyone that knows what burnout is, especially in the clinical sense, is going to be like, oh gosh, yes, because hasn't this been the year for that, if ever there was a year for burnout. But for people that maybe don't know what we mean when we say burnout, can you sort of explain what you mean when you're talking about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, burnout is a symptom of a lot of, you know, feeling overworked and underpaid, underappreciated, feeling like you don't have the resources to tackle kind of the things that you want to do. It can lead to, you know, feelings of cynicism. It can lead to depression, anxiety. It can lead to substance use, you know, alcoholism, addiction, things like that. It can lead to challenges in relationships. It can lead to people not feeling like they're motivated by their work, not feeling connected, not feeling like it's meaningful anymore, kind of wondering like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Really losing that connection maybe to some of the work that they've done or things that were meaningful to them in the first place. I think that kind of sums it up a little bit. I think a lot of people can feel it in different ways, but it's kind of just like at the end of your rope and feeling just kind of like, where do I go from here? What do I do?
I really like how you defined that. 'Cause I think that there is a misconception when people hear burnout, they think just like tired and stressed, and they don't realize that it's like a true psychological state and like physiological state. You know, you mentioned depression, anxiety, cynicism, feeling like you're losing meaning in your work, you're losing your passion. Like it's more than just, oh my God, I work all the time and I'm stressed and I'm tired. You know, it's like a truly deep impact on your well-being.
Mm-hmm. You can feel it physically, you know, it can impact your sleep, it can impact appetite, it can impact exercise routines, you know, all of it. You can feel it. It's just, it's a really heavy, just like, you know, trying to get up in the morning and go do the things and feeling like you're going through the motions and really not feeling connected to it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we, you know, for this podcast, we're going to be focusing mostly on burnout for clinicians and those in like social advocacy positions, but really a lot of the things are going to apply if you're experiencing burnout in any way, because it can be similar as far as like what you need to be aware of and what you need to take care of yourself and rejuvenate so that you're not just sort of running on empty. And that's really what it feels like there's no gas left in the tank, but you still have to get where you're going. And that's, it's difficult. It can be dangerous for a lot of different reasons, I'm sure we'll get into all of this, but it, and it's also just not fun, like that you know, especially if you're doing something in a field like this, where a lot of people go into it because they're passionate about it and they want to help someone. And then all of a sudden you feel your empathy is gone. And like you said, you're cynical and like, you just don't care. And you're like, what is wrong with me? Like, when did I become this person? So yeah, if you're feeling that way at all, you might be experiencing burnout, and it's probably good to just take a moment and assess what is going on and how you got to that point.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I think it's a good point that you brought up that, you know, we'll be talking about it through the lens of helping professionals today, but I see this across the board. I mean, a lot of my clients were working on burnout specifically. That's kind of how I found this little niche for myself. And I see it across the board, you know, whatever the profession is. I think that there's always times in which you can find yourself feeling overworked, underappreciated, underfueled, you know, like under taken care of, and then kind of finding this lack of connection to your work, yourself, all those other things. And having meaning in life is what drives us, you know, whether we're a, you know, therapist, we're a doctor, we're a lawyer, we're a, you know, anybody, you know, you're a train conductor, you're a teacher, you're whatever, you know, everybody has to have something that, you know, gives them meaning and makes them connect to things in the world and keeps them going, you know. So when you don't have attachment to that, it really sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in your work with working with people that are experiencing burnout, what are some of the traits or maybe circumstances that you've noticed to be pretty common that everyone that has burnout shares?
Those are really good questions. I think a couple of things. I think a feeling of underappreciation, and that can come in so many ways, you know, but feeling like you're not seen, feeling like your efforts aren't recognized, feeling like, you know, it doesn't matter what I do, it kind of falls on deaf ears or nobody sees it. Or, you know, it can easily feel just like with any of the social justice stuff we're talking about, feeling just hopeless of just like, I'm facing this over and over again and nothing is changing. Like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? I think that's kind of we all experience stress, but I think that what brings us into burnout is that lack of appreciation or that lack of an answer of why am I doing this kind of thing. You know, it's definitely biased for me in the work that I do. I work, like I said, with a lot of anxious perfectionists. So we have overachievers. We have people who like to do things perfect, like to do things well. You know, but it can come across the board. I think a lot of people who experience this are just chronically used to having to overprove themselves. And we can see this across the board, you know? So I think that's a thing that happens when you're constantly having to prove yourself and then it doesn't feel like you're being seen or heard anyway. That's when burnout happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we first, when you first contacted us and you mentioned that you work with burnout and perfectionism, I thought that was an interesting, it's something that like makes sense that it goes together, but I hadn't given it much thought about why those two things would go together, but that makes perfect sense. And then connecting it with the social advocacy piece, you know, that is definitely something that can easily lead someone to burnout in general, but especially someone who does have a tendency to be a bit perfectionistic, because you literally can't, like, we won't achieve perfection as far as social issues ever, especially in our lifetime. I mean, I don't think ever in, you know, human existence will there ever be a perfectly just world. It can feel like, you know, as individuals, it can feel like your efforts are, you're just like, you're not getting anything back. Or sometimes I think also if it's the kind of thing where you don't always see the results, I know I connect with that as a therapist, where sometimes, especially when I used to work with kids, like, it's a lot of planting seeds and you don't get to see the flower bloom, you know, you don't get to see that, but you just have to kind of trust that you are planting the seeds. Or like sometimes clients, it's more of like a shift that they experience that they don't always realize or doesn't always show. And then also in like the big picture, like the more bigger picture social issues, if you're doing advocacy work, it's like, sometimes it can feel like your work is just not really making much of a difference. So yeah, I just said a lot. So what kind of thoughts are coming up with after all of that?
Yeah, no, I think that the planting the seed thing is really important. You know, that's one of the things that I reflected on so much over the past year is, you know, there is so much demand, and rightfully so, for change in so many avenues. But unfortunately, that stuff doesn't happen overnight. You know, as much as we need it to happen desperately, we have to work with that. You know, we can desperately need food, but if we have to start from a seed, we can't make it grow any faster. But what we can do is we can nurture it. We can make sure we're taking care of the soil. We can make sure that we're watering it. We're making sure that we're, you know, able to keep a track of that. Like, okay, we have to water this. We have to tend to this. We have to make sure we're on top of that. So I think that time to shift the, you know, kind of the view or the lens to, okay, we can't make the seed grow any faster, but we can put everything we have into making sure that is nurtured and that we are nurtured to be able to give that care that the seeds need to grow.
Yes, yes. I like that analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's because, and I was going to sort of bring up, like, I think at least some of what I see when it comes to burnout is a lot of it could be very much connected to just our culture and the way we sort of prioritize work and success and making money and like the hustle and everything. Like, it's just so important. We put it as being so important. And really the outcome is what a lot of people base their success on. And so if you don't get to see the outcome, then it feels like I've not been successful. And, you know, we do this a lot with our clients in that you may not get, you know, to the goal that you want, the your end goal, like right away, but every sort of small little step and just the process of it and the small changes, even just being aware of that can be success. But then I think as clinicians, we don't always pay attention to that. Like, okay, so we may not see the fruits of our labor, you know, happening, but us working towards it, the whole process of making change, for whether it's an individual or, you know, a social justice movement, is just as important and is success as well. And it's just about shifting our view and our idea of what success looks like.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much that I was reacting to when you were talking about that. I think that our culture very much is a burnout culture. We, and it, it's been so interesting for me to observe the past couple, like really just the past month, maybe two, when things have started to open back up, and how there is just this snapback where it's just like, okay, we've had an entire year to just like chill. You need to get back to work. One of my close friends, you know, she really had a lot of flexibility in her job over the past year. And then they had to just snap it back to the point where she's working. She's an athletic trainer at a college, so she has to be there for practices and sports. So when the practices and sports open back up, she has to be there. But practices and sports happen all day now on Sunday, all day Saturday, which was her time and her weekend to catch up with her partner and be able to spend time with her dog and do all of those things. And her boss literally gave her the answer of, you've had an entire year to do that, suck it up. And I think a lot of people are going to hear that it's, okay, it's done. Like, we've had this year, let's go back. Like, let's just jump right back in. And that's also, this is kind of a little tangential and we can get more into this, but that's also my big issue with how self-care is really getting the highlight right now. You have to do self-care. You have to do self-care. And I sit back and say, if you're not doing anything to address what's burning you out, so you need self-care, your self-care is not going to be effective. Like, we have to make the shift. Yes, let's keep the self-care and also address what's burning us out in the first place.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a Band-Aid. Mm-hmm. It becomes a Band-Aid, and knowing that, okay, I made it through this week, but next week I'm going to have to do all of this again. I made it through today, but tomorrow I'm going to have to do this all again. And your self-care is really like, it's crisis interventions. It's like, you know, how can we just keep this person alive for the next 24 hours so they can go work? And you're right. The culture, change would make the self-care much more beneficial and much more enjoyable, and people wouldn't need it as much. And of course, the U.S. is not the only country that has this issue, but I feel like we kind of lead the way in a lot of that for a lot of other countries that are like, oh, well, you know, we're going to take after them. We're going to do this. And then there, I think, you know, you're seeing a lot more mental health issues in some other countries that have become more westernized. And I wonder if part of that is because of the, like, you got to get to work and you need to work all day. And you need to, you know, if you're laying around, not doing anything, that's, you know, that's laziness instead of rest, you know, instead of that's normal that everyone needs that. Time with your family. You need to make time with your family around your work schedule, like all of these things. So
I find the phrase make time to be, it's like one of my pet peeves when people are like, oh, we have to make time. Well, there's literally only 24 hours in the day. Like, it's not like you can like produce more time, like go like make, like, it's not like a thing you make, like it already exists. And you have to work, you have to go to the grocery store, you have to do, you know, take care of the kids, take care of your pets, take care of your whatever. And there's literally no other time. And then when they say, oh, well, you have to make time, there's no more. And then they say they want to put the blame on you, like, oh, well, you don't have good enough time management skills, or you don't practice self-care enough. And then it makes you feel like shit because you are like, oh, well, I don't have good enough skills. I don't mean to step on your toes. But if you want to, can you speak to that a little bit? Like, do you feel like your clients like express some self-blame about their burnout? Like, they feel like they're not doing a good enough job?
Absolutely. I think that I never have had anybody come to me and say, okay, how do I adjust the 24-hour schedule that I have so that I'm less burned out? It's okay, how do I make myself less burned out with what I'm doing already? There's never any conversation about adjusting the things that are contributing to that. It's like, okay, how do I make myself better? And it's like, wait a second, we have to make the shift. And it's, you know, it's incredibly difficult work for them because we're like, wait a second, like, I have to tell somebody no, or I have to tell them, I don't have to tell them that I need to take off because I have a doctor's appointment and I have to justify myself, or wait, I have an hour on my calendar. I was going to use that for other things, but then my boss called me and wanted to have a meeting. I can say no. No, I can't. I can't say no. And it's like, yes, you can. But it is, I am always competing with a fire hose that my clients are up against when it comes to what they're facing. And I am just trying to give them the shield to kind of push back a little bit on that and balance that out a little bit more evenly. But that is a, oftentimes a lot of shock too, that people come to me and they're like, wait, but what's the tool? Like, how can I just do this better? And it's like, you're not doing anything wrong. Actually, we have to adjust this. And how can you face that? How can you, you know, prioritize boundaries? How can we work on saying no? How can we, I mean, even just like reframing, like, okay, I'm actually going to tell you how to sell up the no. Like, I want to do that for you. That sounds awesome. I can do it next week at this day, rather than no, I can't. Cause that's like a panic moment. They can't, they can't do that.
Just the no is too much. We're going to take baby steps to get to no. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's true. And I think a lot of that is a cultural thing too, of like, you're not supposed to say no. Yeah. And you're certainly not supposed to say no to your boss or to your work. You're just supposed to be available. If you're a hard worker, you're there, you're working overtime. And the idea of like, I know for me personally, it has probably taken up until last year. I think last year was the like tipping point for me where I finally was like, you know what, if I'm going to take time off, I don't have to tell my boss what I'm doing during that time off. I've been given that time off. Like, so I don't put anything in there when it says, what are you using? I don't put anything in there. And he doesn't ask. I mean, so, but you know, you always feel like you have to justify or like, well, do I want to take this day off? Because I took a day off last month. And like, I don't want them to think that, like, no, it's okay. Like, just if you have the time to take, you know, then you should do it. I mean, that really is a privilege for a lot of jobs to be able to take time off. And so I recognize that by using that, I'm privileged in that way to work a job where I can. But you know, if that is available to you, then you should do it because you need it. We all need time off in some way. And so then, for, you know, for the people that maybe can't, and I think that's kind of what some of what you're talking about with like the fire hose, it's like, if you really do work in a position where like taking time off is just not something you can do because you work hourly and you need to make that money and you need to have a certain amount of money to, you know, pay your bills and stuff. How do you adjust against the systemic, you know, barriers and also the cultural, you know, barriers that they put on you for, you know, how do you practice that? So I guess what I'm asking are, what are some tips for people to maybe start small in putting that shield up against that fire hydrant?
For sure. And I'm glad that you kind of brought up different things, because I think that not everybody who's listening to this has the privilege to take time off, that has the privilege to say, okay, here's what I need, and I need you to do this kind of thing, or I need help with this, or, you know, there's so many people out there that don't have that privilege. So I think it's really important to recognize that. And I think it's also important for me to recognize like where these tips are going to lie are in a privileged position. So I think that's important to just kind of acknowledge the limitations of this advice. But I think that part of this, you know, the biggest tip that I have for people is to understand, what do you need in order to achieve what you have set forth for yourself? One of my favorite quotes was, okay, I think I could adjust it that way, but have you adjusted your kind of to-do list or your achievements or your tasks for the day with your capacity? You know, what is that? So I think that's something to kind of think about is, okay, what do I need in order to achieve this? And how is what I have in place right now supporting that? And how is it not, you know? And I think that, again, there are very real limitations to that. And then there are some that are workable of, you know, just some of people pleasing, or, you know, like, I don't want to ask for this help, or I don't want to even voice my need. I don't want to even say I'm tired. I can't say I'm tired. And it's like, what kind of power does that have when you're even able to acknowledge, like, I'm tapped, like, I'm doing the best that I can. I'm showing up, I'm tapped, but I'm tapped, you know, like, even for somebody who maybe has some of these limitations that they can't adjust to, you know, is it even just, do you have a safe space to say, I'm so tired. I don't know if this is sustainable. Like, here's what I need. And this is what I have. And I don't know how to do that. It's an imbalanced. Other tips, I would say, I guess I'll pause there and see if you guys have any other comments. And I'm going to think a little bit more about some other tips, because I think that's, yeah, I'm just going to pause there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you're right, because there are certain things that maybe are just fixed. It's, you're not going to be able to do anything about, like, you have to go to your job. You have to work. You don't have the flexibility around that. Obviously you have to take care of your kids or any dependents. So those things, maybe those won't change and you may not be able to do much about that. But I think you're right when it goes to, like, just being able to express, like, I'm overwhelmed, I'm having a hard time, and accepting any help that is available to you. Even just for a small break, even if you just need to take a 20-minute nap, you know, and you're like, ask your partner, can you please watch the kids for 20 minutes? Like, hold them to that. And that can be hard for a lot of people to express the need and then accept the help. It's like, you want help, but then you don't, because I should just be able to take care of it. I should just be able to handle it. This is my job. This is what I'm supposed to do. What I hear a lot is people have it much worse. People have to do, you know, many more things. It's not that bad. Like, well, okay, yeah, maybe in comparison, but for you right now, we're not comparing you to anyone. You right now, you're overwhelmed and tired and you're feeling burnt out, and that's not good for you. And that's not good for anyone that is dependent on you. So I think, you know, the self-care is really also, it should be about taking care of you, but it is also about making sure you're okay and you're there for the people that rely on you.
Yeah. And I think we should be sure to mention the gender differences with this, because there's a huge amount of pressure on women, you know, where it's like, you know, mothers still have, obviously it's starting to become more equal, but mothers still have the majority of the childcare responsibilities and the house stuff, cleaning, cooking and stuff. And then the now,
the management, like the household management, management of everything else. That's, you know, the whole world's working because they're managing it.
Right. And now women being in the workplace more, like, it feels like that's becoming more equal, like getting there with women having full-time jobs and having an income. But then as the household stuff be like also offsetting that, and so now it's like women are expected to be able to do everything. There's a book, you may have heard of it, it's called Burnout by Emily Nagoski. I just started it, but did Jennifer give that to you? Do you know what I'm talking about? Jennifer, our former supervisor, gave it to me as a gift at one point. I don't know if she might give you to you.
No, Jennifer, how come you never gave that to me?
I think she gave it to me when I moved. I might have just ruined the surprise. But anyway, it's a book specifically about burnout in women. And it talks about, I just started it, so I don't have much to say about it, but it talks about just all these extra pressures that are on us as women, especially if you have kids and you run a household. Do you feel like you notice differences in gender or any other sort of demographics as far as the way that burnout presents or the way that you approach treatment?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different. You know, I think that men definitely experience it in different ways. I think that can kind of be more of the traditional sense of like the breadwinner and mm-hmm. what does that mean? And the challenges of being able, I think women can more often attach to, they can feel validated more quickly because they can hear somebody being like, yes, this is ridiculous. And then they can attach more to the emotional sense or emotional needs that they have to have met. And for men, it's one of the stark contrasts I just generally see in working with men is it's generally like the how to and the what does the schedule look like? What do I need to do? Like, it's much more, you know, traditionally like fix it rather than like just attaching to the emotional, because especially with burnout, there's such an emotional component to it. Like that cynicism or that lack of hope or that lack of, you know, or just feeling stressed in general. So I think getting them to acknowledge what's contributing to the burnout cycle is very different with men. That's once you can kind of get to that and then get them to kind of have some leeway with that, then you can have some movement. With women, I tend to see them just attaching to the validation more. And with them, it's a lot more of like sticking to the boundaries. Like they can recognize it like, oh yeah, no, that's where it needs to happen. And it's just having that continued support to like, okay, can you continue to exercise that boundary versus like, can you even just acknowledge that you're burned out?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I notice in working with women too, it is a lot of getting them to stick to those boundaries. And, you know, for myself, that's been an issue as well, but, you know, a lot of encouraging of like, did you tell your partner that's how you feel? Did you ask them to help you? You know, have you expressed that it feels like they're not helping you? I mean, just like, how do you need to talk to them because they may not even understand that this is what's going on, you know, underneath the surface. And you might have to hold them accountable in some ways of like, I need this from you right now because, mm-hmm. you know, and which of course, then it is putting more burden on the woman to ask for the help and to be specific, but that is kind of how it goes. And like, you've got to, you know, until we can get the labor more, you know, equal amongst the genders, then yeah, it is, you are going to have to be more explicit in asking for help and holding your partner to that. And that, so that those boundaries are very difficult, but that is an important part of self-care and preventing burnout. And so, you know, what are some things when you're working with people that you suggest to sort of help? Maybe they finally have gotten the burnout kind of under control for this situation, but like, what can they do to prevent that from happening again? Especially if you work in a job where it's going to happen. Like if you're a therapist or if you work in social justice or you work with people, really burnout is going to happen very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of attaches, my answer to that kind of attaches to the other like tip or thing I was thinking of, because I think, you know, there are things that we can do as helping professions. Is it's important to like walk the walk, you know, like, how are you still showing up for your clients in ways that you're telling them to show up? I think that there is, when we talk about the helping professionals, when we talk about this pandemic, it has been so easy. The guilt just almost like bulldozes any kind of self-care, just like obliterates it. Like, nope, there's so much need. Like, don't you see? Don't you see? Don't you want to help? Don't you want to help? And you have to be very rooted in thinking about the bigger picture, hence why my place is called Big Picture Psych. But you have to kind of think and understand, like, what's the bigger picture? Why am I doing this? Why is it important for me to say no? Why is it important to keep my caseload at a number that actually feels manageable for me? When is it important for me to say, no, I can't do that graveyard shift? I know there's need, but I can't do it right now. Because when you are a centered helping professional, the care that you provide to the people that desperately need it, the quality just increases. Mm-hmm. And it's so important to attach to that. And also, you're not participating in broken systems that keep us burned out. You're choosing to step out of it. Like, okay, I could take that graveyard shift, and then I'm just going to keep giving crappy care to the people that come through the door because I'm so burnt out and I just don't have the bandwidth to deal with you yelling at me right now. Versus if you step back and say, I can't do that, and then come back to your next graveyard shift completely, you know, I mean, not completely rested, but more rested. What's that like for then the person who's receiving care? They don't have the same story of like, well, see, this is why I don't come and seek help. Nobody cares about me. Versus like, wow, that person really could take the time to listen to me. Like there's a shift that happens. And so you have to keep an eye on the bigger picture as to like, what am I doing to help? You know, like with helping professions and social justice, there's just this need that's there. And so you want to jump in and help, but a lot of people want to kind of like run before they can walk. They just want to say yes and help and always be there and say yes, but then they burn out so quickly that it's just not sustainable. So it's like, okay, what's the bigger picture? I want to help with these kind of bigger systemic things, or do little pieces, things here and there to really chip away at this big system. So what do I actually need to be able to do that? Because that's what's more important rather than just saying yes or being there all the time.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It sounds like what you're saying is like, it's like working from the ground up. Like if we want to create an ongoing sustainable like cultural shift, it's like, you know, using the examples of saying no to your boss. Okay, that feels really hard right now. And that's something that, you know, it's going to take so much like mental energy to like work up the nerve to do that and then process what sort of emotional reaction you have to that. And so it might make you feel more burned out at first, all of that mental energy that it takes for you to set the boundary. But over time, your boss is eventually going to see, okay, there's someone that is going to tell me no if they need to tell me no. And then other people are going to see that. And then you're going to be able to show up to your job in a better headspace. And then eventually it has kind of a ripple effect, and it will hopefully create a bigger picture. Speaking of the name of your practice, picture shift. Is that part of kind of what you were getting at?
Definitely. It's when you can kind of keep those factors in mind, or rather than just what's the immediate need that I need to solve right here, mm-hmm. it's, you know, thinking about how does this fit in? I mean, any of the listeners here and many of my clients who have children can very much identify to this similar practice of you can't always give in to your kids when they're screaming in the grocery store at the candy aisle. Like, sometimes you have to say no, because it's part of a bigger picture. Like you have to be like, okay, sometimes you have to say no, and they're going to kick and they're going to scream way louder at first. Mm-hmm. And then it goes down. Like eventually it won't be so hard. So, you know, when you can think about a lot of times what happens with burnout is the boundaries are just demolished. And so you have to start pulling them back. And it is always easier to set a firmer boundary that is more, that's maybe further away from the goal, and you can be flexible with that rather than push the boundary to its edge and then try to like eke its way back, because people just assume like that's what happens. And to take it back to the similar analogy with kids, if you always told them yes in the grocery store candy aisle to just get them to stop crying, and when you realize that's created a bigger problem, as you try to say no, oh wow, like talk about some extra bandwidth you're going to need to deal with them freaking out. Because it's like, in their mind, it's like, no, like this is just what you've done. What are you doing? So even for your boss to just be like, wait a second, this is what you've always done. You've always said yes. Like what's happening? You have to hold on to the bigger picture to be like, okay, I have to hang in there to get this to be eventually, you know, where I want it to be. And like, overall, it's important for me to show up in a quality way rather than just a quantity way.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could even, like something that I've told my clients is just kind of own the discomfort, like even saying to your boss, hey boss, I really want to say yes to this, but I know I shouldn't, and I'm feeling uncomfortable about that. And I was wondering if we could talk through talk through the, you know, talk through the fact that I feel uncomfortable saying no or something like that. Just kind of naming that and having them be out in the open. Also, I think a lot of people are pleasantly surprised when they say no. They'll notice that, and we're using the example of saying no to your boss at work, but this goes obviously for any boundary that is a new boundary, that people a lot of times are not like, aren't going to have a problem with it. Like, people have in their minds that they're going to be like, how dare you say no to me? And usually, I mean, I don't know, but like most of the time people are, maybe they're a little annoyed or they're understanding. Like, I feel like rarely people are like pissed off when you set a boundary.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I've noticed that too in my own setting boundaries. I'm like, that went way better than I thought it was going to. Wow. Like, that wasn't even an issue at all. And then when I, you know, try to encourage clients to do that too, and they come back and they're like, yeah, it was pretty painless. Like, nobody got upset. No relationships ended. Like, they were like, yeah, okay, that's cool. And I'm like, I know, right? It's just, we always expect it's going to be worse than it is. And it usually is not. Of course, there are times when someone is going to push back and someone is going to be angry with you for setting that boundary. And that really just says more about who they are than anything. But, you know, I tell them, like, when you set a boundary, the people that aren't good for you are going to get upset and might try to push that boundary. But if you stand firm, they're eventually just going to go away. You would take care of the problem by setting that boundary, because they will leave. And then the people that are good for you and do care about you might be annoyed, but they'll get over it. And then ultimately everything should be better, because, like, yeah, you know, the trash will take itself out. Mm-hmm. As long as you just stand firm in that boundary. And so, yeah, that's, that can be very hard. I like your idea, Emily, about just being upfront about how it's uncomfortable, or mm-hmm. you could even say to someone like, hey, I'm trying this new thing. I'm trying to set more boundaries and pay attention to how I feel. And although I would love to help you or do this for you, I'm starting to feel this burnout, or I'm starting to feel like I need some rest. So I'm going to have mm-hmm. to say no. And that's a nice way of phrasing it. So it's not like, no, I don't want to help you. It's that I care about you, but I just can't right now for my own sake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like what you said, the trash will take itself out, because the people that you need to set, the people that are going to get mad at you for setting boundaries are the people that are, that need it the most. Like, those are the people that you don't want in your life anyway. And that goes with even with jobs. Like, and I know that maybe not everyone has the luxury of like, oh, well, if my boss gets mad at me, I'll just go find a new job. Like, it's not that simple. If you do have the luxury of like having other employment options, you do want a boss that is going to allow you to set boundaries, because any boss that doesn't, like you mentioned your friend, who was your friend's boss, who was just like, well, you had all this free time for a year, so get over it. Like, that's not a healthy employer-employee relationship. And that's not what you want in your life anyway. Like I said, if you have the luxury to have options as far as your job, and I know not everyone does, but.
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of it is like, it's the match, you know? So if you set a boundary and it's an appropriate match, like that person can respect the boundaries and it works for you, like then there will of course just be some growing pains, but it won't be this kind of huge blow up. And so then it's like, okay, like where that's again, then you can kind of check in of like, okay, how does this actually fit my needs right now? Like, okay, like I need somebody that kind of aligns with my boundaries or can kind of see what I'm thinking or kind of can see that other piece. So I think it's kind of about finding that good fit. You know, and I think that a lot of this, you know, it's important, like we've been acknowledging, you know, not everybody has the privilege to do this, but I think what I'm really passionate about as well is, especially for us in the helping roles, like if we're helping people and we have these options and these privileges, we absolutely have to take it, because we are the people who are holding people when they're falling apart, when they can't do it anymore. You need to be taken care of in just the same way that you want to give to your patients, to the people you're helping, to the social justice effort that you want to put forward. And I think that's really just like our responsibility, you know, in a privileged role, you know, you need to be able to see how that can be done for good. And one of the ways you can do that is make sure that you're 100% and check in with your boundaries, check in with what you need so that you can do this amazing work, because taking care of therapists and doctors and, you know, politicians and all, well, not all politicians, I'll take that back hugely, but people who have, you know, are helping in efforts, you know, you have to be taken care of, because some wonderful things can happen from people who are addressing those needs for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love how you need to be in your best self so that you can do this amazing work. Like I love how you, you know, hype them up, you know, like, cause you said, like you said at the beginning, it burnout disconnects you from the passion, from the meaning of the work itself. And, it sounds like you do a good job of really just reminding them how amazing their work is and how their, them being their best self while doing this really amazing work is what makes it amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We need to practice what we preach, you know? And if we're telling our patients to practice self-care and to set boundaries, well, then we definitely need to do that as well. Otherwise, why would they listen to us? If we're telling them this is the thing you need to do to feel better and to have better relationships and to take care of your mental health, well, then yeah, we need to be taking care of our mental health and have better relationships as well, as best we can. If we know these things, you know, we should do them. And that is hard. I think when you're in a helping profession, you might lean towards the personality type of being very giving and selfless. And so you think, well, this applies to everyone but me. But yeah, of course, like you've said, no, if you want to do good work, you have got to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. You've got to be able to be present for the people that are coming to you for that reason. And they're coming to you, and that's a big responsibility, because they are dumping a lot of times everything onto you, and you've got to be able to be solid and hold that for them as best as mm-hmm. you can. And if you can't even hold, you know, cause you've got your own stuff going on, it's just not going to be effective for anyone.
Yeah. And I think that part of that is also, you have to be, another tip is like, be realistic about how much the type of work that you're doing takes from you, you know, like how much energy do you need? How much bandwidth do you need? You know, a lot of times I think that because in the helping professions, the answer almost always when you say, why did you go into this profession, was, well, I want to help people. We have this tendency to dive into the deep end more quickly or first. And that's, again, that kind of, you know, walking before you, or running before you can walk kind of analogy. And, you know, we don't check in with how much it takes to hold all of that and be realistic about it, you know, because there's also the guilt of like, but there's 100 other people there that need our help, you know, like I can't stop. And it's like, no, you have to slow down and just know the lay of the land and then go into that, you know, like be aware of how much this takes to hold all of that so that you can then also be realistic about what you need to take care of yourself so that you can be that present person you want to be and attack those kind of problems that you are so convicted to address.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing that it made me think about when you were talking about that was, you're going to have to put those boundaries, not only in your professional sense, but then if you're in the helping profession, you're a person that wants to help people, especially if you have the job title of therapist or clinician or anything like that, the people in your life know that, and they often go to you to dump things, and you are not their therapist. You are not your friend's therapist. You're not your family's therapist. You're not your partner's therapist. Like finding that this is a hard thing. I mean, this is very difficult. How can you be their friend and be a good, empathetic friend that supports them, but also not be their therapist where do you draw the line, and how can you be there for people and not feel like you're working off the clock? And sometimes it really does just have to be like, you know, for me, sometimes it's just like, oh, wow, that sucks.
Yep, that's it.
That's all I have to say.
Someone that goes to Stephanie quite often for support and advice, I will say that is how she responds. And you know, I think that I also tried to do, as you know, Stephanie's best friend who does tend to go to people for support a lot, you know, it doesn't bother me at all. Like when I can tell that she's showing up for me in the way she can, and you know, not like you know, not necessarily like completely fully engaging, I'm not offended by it at all. Like, she's human and she, you know, and you're gonna be able to, people will find people in their lives that are gonna understand that you are a person and you only have so much that you can give, and people want to think that they're like superheroes and they can like just give and give and give, and it's like, you're not. Like, you are a human being. Even if you're a really amazing human, you're still just a human. And I don't mean to sound like, oh, you're just a human, you know, like you're
but you have limits.
Yeah, like we all have limits. Like literally every, even Beyonce, literally every, I have a weird thing with Beyonce, but literally every human has their limits, and it doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you like, it does, it just makes you normal. It just makes you human.
Doesn't make you selfish.
Selfish, yes. It doesn't make you selfish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And what's it like for, you know, you to understand like, okay, I know Stephanie has a limit and her limit is it sucks. Okay. Like, I know now, I understand, like, she's telling me she has a limit, versus like, if Stephanie was just to try to, you know, hang in there with you and, you know, really be like distracted, or, you know, giving, maybe saying something in a way, in a tone that wouldn't be authentic to her, that's a different experience than if you say, I don't have the bandwidth for this right now. And so when can I talk to you to do that? One of the things I learned early on in my career was to be able to tell my clients, look, I'm not going to be available for you after hours or on the weekends, because I can't always guarantee I can be present for you. So here are some options. If you have to call, or if you ever get into that situation, let's talk about those right away, because I would never want to feel like I had to pick up the phone when I don't want to pick up the phone because I'm out to dinner with my friends, but I feel guilty that I have to answer the phone and I set this up and I didn't set the boundary, versus like, you know what, like, it's Saturday afternoon, I can't call them. Here's what I can do, you know, kind of setting the frame early on and letting them know it's because I want to be present for you. And I can't guarantee I can be present in this way.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love how you said the example, like, you know, because we have to set boundaries for our clients the way that our clients need to set boundaries for the people in their lives. And you as the therapist have this really great, you know, the role that you setting boundaries with them is it's a really great way to set that example.
Right. And yeah.
Like you said, it's like, it's not like you are annoyed, you know, like if you get a call on a Saturday afternoon, it's not like you're like mad at them that they called. It's like, I want to be there for you, but I know that I can't be there for you and still show up as my best self during our session. You know, it's like out of care for them, you're not going to answer their phone call, which sounds contradictory, but it's not.
Absolutely. And I talk about that a lot when I consult with other clinicians, but I talk about that with my clients as well, of just like, setting a boundary doesn't mean you don't care. It's not like you don't care to do a good job at your job. It's you can't do a good job on Friday at 7 o'clock when you've put in 4, 7, you know, 10 hour days already. Like, it's just being realistic about what is what I can deliver to you. And I want to give you my best. And this is how I do my best work.
I'm just curious, because this is a really, it's a unique specialty. I don't think I've ever met someone that has a practice that, you know, based on burnout, specifically among people who tend to be perfectionistic. Like what got you into that and made you interested in that?
Well, I did a lot of work when I started my practice about, you know, trying to be intentional about it, what I wanted it to be. And people got me thinking about like, well, what's your niche? You know, like, what are you focused on? I was like, what? I don't know. You know, I was the therapist that said yes to everything, you know, like, who do I like to work with? Who benefit the most from me? I like to switch it that way. Cause people are like, well, you don't like working with me. And it's like, actually people just don't actually find me as helpful. If this is your concern, these people find me the most helpful. So I had to really think about like, where do I do my best work? And I just kind of had to think about like, where are the clients in the sessions that I find myself feeling really helpful, feeling really energized by, the people I can see back to back, you know, and, you know, doing all of that stuff, like who gives me energy to be the best therapist that I can be. And it just kind of happened to be, it's a little bit of myself. Like, mm-hmm. I'm an anxious perfectionist. That's why I do well working with them. I know what's happening in your head. It's mm-hmm. happening in mine. mm-hmm. But I also found that that was just kind of a, just like the budding addiction concerns, you know, that was something that I just was like, huh, I really feel energized by these kinds of presentations. And this is also just something that keeps coming up. And oh, this is something that just keeps coming up. And the burnout was a constant, and burnout is not just at work. You can see it with relationships. You can see it with, you know, just friendships, things like that. Totally. Absolutely. So it was just kind of like, oh, and I just kind of reflected on the things that I was constantly saying to them. And I was like, this is the same stuff that we talk about when we talk about burnout, like boundaries, saying no, and, you know, being able to know your needs and being able to be realistic about that, keeping a bigger picture and values in mind of like, what brings me, you know, energy, what brings my life meaning, and what then happens when you are living in line with your values and with meaning, the kind of interactions you have and how you impact the people around you. So that's just kind of how it kind of just fell into my lap a little bit. mm-hmm.
Good. Yeah. That's awesome. I love that you, the way you asked that question, like, what is it that energizes me? How is it that I find what presenting issues help me to feel most helpful? I mean, those are really great questions to find kind of your area of expertise.
I was really resistant to the idea of niching down, but first, and then it was like, oh, like actually this is much more beneficial when people get the best of me rather than just like, I don't work well with this presentation. I find myself feeling ineffective. I find myself doing things that are, you know, addressing things that have nothing to do with the client, you know, like I'm feeling ineffective mm-hmm. and not like a crappy therapist. Like you don't want me as a therapist. You mm-hmm. want the therapist that's like, I got this. Like, I get this. I get it, you know, and being able to talk about that. And it's hard in this profession to say no. So.
Yeah. And that's a good example of self-care and boundary setting. Like this is my niche and this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, if you have a different presenting issue, like it's nothing personal. It's just not, you know, and you saying no to that is a great example of that.
Really being ethical too, of like, this is what I'm good at. This is what I like to do. And mm-hmm. knowing where you're, and also like in the clinical sense, maybe you avoid working with certain populations because of your own past trauma or history, or, you know, you don't want there to be transference and counter transference going on. So you set that boundary, and that's, you know, a way to have those healthy work relationships, healthy, you know, clinician client relationships, and that I'm not working with the things that are difficult for me to, you know, be a good therapist for. I'm not bringing in my own stuff. So I'm all about you right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we could kind of minimize the amount of experiences that people have of like, oh, they just didn't get me, or like, we just didn't click, you know? And it's just like, okay, like it's on the therapist to do the work and be like, where do you find that you leave the session going like, this is why I did this, you know, versus the like, oh my God, I'm a terrible therapist, or I don't think that went well, or any of the, you know, feelings that we can have. Like, do the work on your own to see, like, is there something about that? Like, is there a certain, you know, area that I can focus on that I find, like, is there a theme to those mm-hmm. sessions that I feel myself most energized by? And like, that's why I like to, you know, to flip the narrative or flip the phrasing of like, this type of presentation finds my style of work most helpful. You know, it's not that I don't want to help all the people, I do, but people that work with me with these issues find me to be most effective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And this approach, I think, is helpful for really any profession or any, you know, anything that, that, you know, does require, or not require, but, you know, you may benefit from having a specialty. So it was a really good approach. And I'm also licensed in Illinois, so I may keep you in mind for some referrals.
Of course.
I will say I certainly come across quite a few people that struggle with this, but we're about out of time. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention or discuss that we didn't touch on?
No, I think we discussed a lot of different angles, and I think we were, you know, holding space for areas that we could focus on and that we had, you know, things to say about, and also recognize our limitations. And, you know, we, like you were saying, we welcome feedback. I welcome feedback.
Good. All right. Well, thank you
so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much
for reaching out and coming on our podcast, and especially talking about this topic. Like we said, anyone listening to this could get something from it, because I'm sure everyone has experienced burnout in some way, but especially with just the events that have happened since, you know, what, March 2020, there's been a huge increase in this issue. And so it's really important that people be aware of that and start to consider, now that things are opening up, what can we do to kind of change that in ourselves, in our workplace, in society? What can we do going forward to, if this happens again? Hopefully it never does, but chances are it might. How can we be more prepared? And how can we, what did we learn from maybe taking that break that we can use going forward? Thank you so much.
I will say the last thing about this past year, I think, has helped us see the things that have always been there. Mm-hmm. And when we took away the things, the vacations and the dinners and the drinks, then we could see like, oh, like I don't have these kind of self-care things, and here are the issues. We looked at the part two, you know, mm-hmm. you have to have the self-care, but you have to know like what's actually draining me. And this mm-hmm. year just made us look at everything that's been happening for years and years and years in many different aspects that have been draining. And okay, how can we approach this in a more thoughtful and intentional way?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think a lot of extroverts or people who like to go out and like do a lot of things, I'm talking about myself, something that I, cause I usually am always like, I'm like, let's go out, let's go to dinner, let's hang out, you know? And then, social distancing, and just, I like felt so rested. And I was like, I thought that, being around people was more beneficial to me than it actually was tiring me out more than I thought it was. So I'd agree with you that the pandemic certainly like, light was shown on like what it actually is that burns you out and what you truly need.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So thanks again for being here. We really enjoyed having you. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with friends and family.
And don't forget to follow the show's Instagram for updates on new episodes at Just Mental Health Podcast. That is with a period between each word. We record a new episode every week. This is Steph.
And
this is Dr. Horror
signing off. Thanks for listening.